You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM, and today I have the honor of speaking with Madame Marie-Claude Bibeau, our MP for Stanstead Compton, and welcome to CJMQ.
Thank you.
I had a couple of questions. With the pandemic going on and all the changes that it's made to everyone's lives, I was wondering, how do you manage to keep in contact with people and keep serving our community through all of this? And how is that going for you?
Well, for all of us, I think it's been a period of adaptation, but I have a very, very great team in the riding, and we have all started working from home since March 15, more or less. And we're coming back a little bit in the office now, but we have learned how to work remotely, how to stay in contact with the community. We became expert in Zoom and Teams and WebEx and Skype and all of these video conferences. But, you know, I had, for example, weekly meetings with mayors, with farmers, with community leaders to make sure that we were able to understand the challenges, that I was able to influence the design of the programs that have been put in place to support the people and the businesses and the community organizations. My team was had so many contacts with people who needed assistance to come back from another country, for example. Repatriation was a big deal in the beginning, and then, you know, supporting people who were facing financial challenges, community organizations as well. So we learned to work differently, but we kept being very well connected with the community to support them.
Yes, because you've always been very active in the community and very much hands-on, going to all kinds of different events. So I wondered how you were managing to keep that contact through all of this. And how do you see the next few months shaping up to be able to continue doing what you're doing?
Well, it will be kind of a hybrid dynamic. The team is coming to the office, not everyone at the same time. We are sharing the time in the office and the time at home, but still encouraging people to do as much as we can by phone or by Zoom to protect everyone. And but you know, people need assistance with different federal programs. We are there for that. We are working hard on the relaunch of the economy, so it's important for me to keep listening to the leaders in our communities to see what the needs are, what the emergencies are, and I can tell you that we hear a lot about environment.
Well, on that subject, the Canadian emergency benefit has helped a lot of people, but we're still hearing from farmers and business owners that they're having a really hard time to find workers. Do you have any ideas on how to rectify that?
It's quite challenging, but we had to, you know, to proceed quickly to support these millions of people who lost their revenue. So we put in place the CERB, the Canadian Emergency Benefit, and it was really needed. Now you might have heard that we are transitioning toward going back to the normal insurance, unemployment insurance for those who are eligible to this program. Mm-hmm. And for others to still offer kind of a transition program, there will be support for example, the les travailleurs autonomes, those who are not those who have their own business.
Yes.
And who are not normally eligible to EI, well, there will be a special support for them, as well as for those who can't return to work for a health season, or for those who have to take care of their family and for this reason, because related to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the type of, you know, transitioning mechanism that we will put in place. But we want to go of, you know, closer to the normal EI.
Yes.
With rules also, rules and controls, I would say, closer to EI.
Okay. Well, that brings up another question. The federal government has spent an awful lot of money over the past few months, $350 billion. But Has the government lost control of spending? Are you going to increase taxes to make up for this or cut services? How do you see this working out? And what about the impact on future generations?
Well, no, we did not lose control. There was what we have done it on purpose. We have decided that people needed to be supported. We are one of the countries with the best financial situation, one of the best of the G7. We were able to afford it, and it was a choice that we had to make. Did we want Canadians individually to be extremely, falling under debts, or did we want to be a responsible government supporting Canadians because we had the capacity to do it? So this is the choice that we have decided to make. It was one or the other.
Yeah.
If all these families wouldn't have received the CERB, you can imagine what would be the status of their personal financial situation right now.
Well,
now we have to transition. We have to support, to get the economy rolling, and we want it to be done in a sustainable manner, sustainably in terms of environment, sustainably in terms of finance as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that it's when we look at our mortgage, it's always proportional to the salary of the family.
Hmm.
And it's a bit the same thing. We have to be responsible that the debt, that we have the capacity to reimburse them, but we are a government that cares for people, and we want to be sure that we will put in place, the programs that will get the economy rolling while, making it more equitable, having more equity in terms of social equity.
Yes.
is definitely something that we care a lot about.
That's an excellent point. I hadn't actually thought of that. That's a very good point, the capacity of the Canadian
economy. Maybe I could add, because you mentioned the next generation, and this is something else. The next generation, they want us to do what is right for the environment. They want us to fight against climate change, and we have to put these measures in place. And they need, the proper infrastructure to where we live, because if we let the bridges or the les brise-glace or, the important infrastructure just be in a very bad situation, someone will have to pay one day. And, this is the time, and we want these social programs in place so this new generation has the capacity to develop its full potential and will be able to contribute to the community and to the economy as well. So if we don't care for them today and we just, squeeze everything and we don't give them the opportunity to build their generation, I don't think it would be a good investment either.
No, I see your point. Speaking about finances and all of those things, maybe a little bit of a change of subject. In the past few months, we've heard an awful lot about the WE charity and some of the questions that have arisen surrounding the Prime Minister and the former Minister of Finance and having perhaps placed themselves in a very bad situation with the WE charity. Do you have anything to say about that? Or?
Of course. I think it's a very unfortunate situation. The Prime Minister has been always very committed for youth, and this program was important to him. He wanted, the young people to get involved in their community and get rewarded, especially in a situation where the numbers we were getting was that maybe up to 50% of the students might not go back to school. So this was a program that was very dear to his heart. And, we were so focused on delivering fast and well, and it's been done maybe too fast, but there was definitely no intention at all to get any personal benefit. The Prime Minister and Mr. Morneau has shared all the information, responded to all the questions. There's absolutely no trace of corruption. I'm sorry to say that, but the opposition is only trying to make us look bad when they see that Canadians are so happy with the measures we have put in place. And it's hurting us a lot. And and it's hard to get over it. But you know, when you are playing in the field, you run, you have the ball, you make goals, but sometimes you drop the balls. But of course, when you're sitting in the bleachers or on the sideline, you don't drop the ball. And we're not perfect. We're doing our best, but I can assure you that there was absolutely no intent, no, you know, bad intention. And I will give you an example. As the Minister of Agriculture, I was responsible for food security. And I got $100 million to distribute to food banks. And I had to do it fast. So I was looking for who could be the best partners in Canada who would have the biggest, you know, the more reliable and developed network to reach all these food banks all across the country in all these, you know, communities, not only in big cities. And I've decided to work with only five of them and rely on them to then, you know, distribute all across the country. And it was Food Banks Canada, for example. And in Quebec, we know Les Moissons. Mm-hmm. So it was Breakfast Club and Salvation Army. So we had to make that kind of decisions because the civil servant, our officials, did not have the capacity to provide, put in place these programs to distribute so much money to so many people and organizations across the country. We had to find partners quickly, much more quickly than we normally do. We did our best. I think we did good for the great majority, and we dropped the ball for one big program, and it's unfortunate. But I hope that Canadians will remember that we were there to support them, and that they will forgive that we're not perfect.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I really do see what you mean. It's not as if the government can start recreating all of these organizations, brand new organizations, that to distribute funds in an emergency when they already exist. So it makes sense that you would use existing ones, and sometimes things that aren't foreseen come up. I can understand that. Yeah. Wanted to ask, do you think that we're looking at possibly an election this fall?
I hope not. We are not in this mindset, I can assure you, from the Liberal team. We are working hard on building the... it's still kind of a platform in the sense that, you know, with the new speech of the throne we are working on, it's our plan for the relaunch of the economy that we will be proposing to Canadians through Parliament. And we are doing a lot of consultation. We're trying to see, you know, because of COVID, everything has changed. So we have to give ourselves a new roadmap. And this is what we are focused on right now. And it's not with the you know, thinking about an election. Obviously, if this is a decision of the opposition parties, we will be ready, but we're not working really on that right now.
Oh, that makes sense. I was wondering, the producers, they've had to adapt to a lot of things that they have no control over, the weather, plant, animal diseases, conflicts in transport, unpredictability of some business partners through all of this COVID. Has there been anything to help them with these challenges? Do you want to explain the main ones to us and what your government has done to help them?
Yes, of course. They had to face additional challenge to already, you know, a difficult year that they had with the market disruptions and rail disruptions and the weather always. And, well, the good news is that our international food supply chain remain strong. But the two, three most difficult challenges that they had to go through are related to the closure of restaurants and institutions. Obviously, it decreased the demand quite a bit. It increased a little bit on the grocery side, but it's not as much. And you are not buying the same thing and not in the same format when or packaging when you buy in the grocery, whether besides, you know, just going to the restaurant. So that was a significant challenge for some more than others. And another one was the fact that there's been COVID éclosion.
Outbreaks.
outbreaks, thank you, COVID outbreaks in some important processing facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to stop for a few days or a few weeks or slow down their operations, and farmers had to keep their animals in the farm for longer. So that was a very significant challenge at a certain point. And labor shortage. We did a lot to support them with the coming of the temporary foreign workers. We had approximately 80% coming, and maybe sometimes late, but still. But just the anxiety and the risk and the not knowing how many workers you're going to have, labor shortage is a significant challenge for them. So we've put in place different type of measure. To start, there are programs that always exist. They are always open, and we call them the business risk management programs.
Mm-hmm.
And for an average year, it's $1.6 billion that is distributed to farmers. It will be much more this year. Farmers, you might have heard them say that it's not enough, and I can assure you and them that I'm working hard with my provincial colleagues to improve these programs, because these are cost-shared. It's paid by the federal at a level of 60% and by the provinces at 40%. So we're trying to improve these programs, but during this time, we have put in place other programs like grid stability that normally it's about $6 million. For a year, we have brought $125 million. Think about the CEBA, you know, the Canadian Emergency Business Account. It was open to all the businesses, and the first program that we have launched did not allow many farmers to apply. So we have made changes for them to be for this program to be more accessible to farmers. So if they were all to apply, it would have meant $670 million. Mm-hmm. The wage subsidies,
mm-hmm.
I've heard many of them using this. We have put in place a program of $77.5 million for the processors, $50 million to support the isolation that the temporary foreign workers had to do before starting the work, $35 million to help the farmers put in place some protection measures within their, you know, environment and housing for their foreign workers as well, $200 million for the Canadian Dairy Commission, and $50 million to buy some surplus as well and distribute these surplus to food banks. So that was quite a bit of programs to support the ag sector.
Yeah, that's a lot of programs, and it's a lot of activity, a lot of money being spent trying to deal with all of this. But that brings up the question of what are your priorities for the upcoming year? What are some of the things that are you hoping to maybe expand upon or improve?
Well, as the Minister of Agriculture, I would say I'm working hard on the this relaunch of the economy. I want to be sure that the ag sector will be a pillar of it. It's a very important sector of the economy, the most important manufacturing sector across the country,
mm-hmm.
represented in each and every region. So it's important that we be at the heart of it. The labor shortage is definitely something that is, there's a job mismatch, if I can say right now. Because we have labor shortages in some sector, as the food sector and the ag sector, but while there's a high percentage of unemployment. So we have to work on this job mismatch. This is something that I care. And as I said a bit earlier, improving the business risk management programs with my provincial colleagues, and obviously completing the program to compensate the sectors which are under supply management, dairy, poultry, and eggs.
That's an awful lot of work to get done. And I'm hearing about the Prime Minister having prorogued Parliament until September 23rd. Doesn't that seem to me that perhaps it would be better to have Parliament open and dealing with these things? Or can you explain that a bit?
Well, I think we had to stop these parliamentary activities, to take the time to sit and reflect and build this new platform. And not be only in a responsive, you know, way, and never having the time to sit and reflect. We needed to reflect. Everything has changed. And then on September 23rd, we will come back. We will come back with a clear roadmap, a budget, or a financial update will follow. So, you know, Canadians will know very clearly what we intend to do, where we are going, and hopefully the Parliament will support so we can proceed. And then we will have the capacity to put in place all these new measures. But sometimes when you are just, you know, in a reacting to things, you don't take the good decisions.
So you're foreseeing the possibility of having some kind of recovery budget announced on or around September 23rd?
I think it's reasonable to think that some kind, if it's not a full budget, but at least a financial statement should follow the speech of the throne.
That would be great.
In the following weeks, I would say.
What's the significance of the speech of the throne speech? I mean, is it really relevant or?
It really gives us the direction that we're going to take. And the speech of the throne will be followed by a financial statement.
Yes.
But with our government, I'm sure you know that all ministers have mandate letters. And I can tell you that us, as ministers, we do follow. We are committed to achieve our mandate letter, which is kind of, you know, following the speech of the throne. You get more details in when you look at the mandate letters of the ministers, but the speech of the throne is the overarching direction.
Oh.
And I can tell you that ministers and officials, our deputy ministers and our team, we look at the mandate letter and these are our priorities and we are working toward achieving these.
Wow. Yeah, we're speaking with the Honorable Madame Marie-Claude Bibeau of Compton-Stanstead, our Member of Parliament. And I was just wondering, what are your priorities for the next few months in concrete terms? And what services do you propose to offer to the citizens in our region?
Well, with my amazing team again, please never hesitate to call to email us. And actually, with the team, we are accompanying individuals. Citizens who have challenges with the federal services. They might have, we've seen, you know, some situation where people were in financial distress and sitting with them, we realized that they had not submitted their tax, la déclaration d'impôt annuel, their annual
tax report.
Let's say. And then for that, they were not eligible to the Canada Child Benefit, for example. So this is only one example, but when yourself or, you know, a friend, a neighbor, you know, someone who was, you know, challenged in different ways, they don't know, they get a form from the federal government and, you know, it's not everyone who was comfortable with reading it and understanding what it means. So we can sit with these people, look at it, call the department, ask for more questions. So, and then we are able to explain to them what the situation here is, what their options are, and we have helped quite a big number of people. So sometimes it may be assisting people who are kind of stuck in another country. But I would say that everything related to Revenue Canada, Immigration Canada, are the Service Canada in general, we are supporting those who need assistance. I expect that many people will need to transition from the CERB, the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit, to EI or the other temporary measures. I expect that people will need assistance to go through that. I want to keep a close relation with the municipalities, my 36 mayors, community organizations, business people, so I can once again influence the new platform the new programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the quality of our water, of our lakes, is something that is dear to my heart in our region. And we have seen this summer the overuse of our lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an impact on our environment, and some of them are drinking water source, so that there are challenges around water management that I care about.
Well, we've been talking with Madame Marie-Claude Bibeault, the honorable member of Compton-Stanstead. I want to thank you very much for everything you do in our community, and also for taking this time to speak with us here at CJMQ.
It's my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.